As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Yeah, hello and welcome everybody. I'm Danny Kelly, the new host of The View from the Lane, The Athletic's fantastic Tottenham Hotspur podcast. I guess it's fair to say I'll be hosting the show for the rest of the season. And fantastic news, following on success of the podcast last season, it's now going to be twice a week. We hope you can join us for all of that. I'm joined in the podcast, of course, by The Athletic's James Moore and The Athletic's Charlie Eccleshare. Jack Pitbrook, who you're used to, of course, he's not been entirely given the elbow. He's had to go to Paris. There's some kind of football story going on there. I'm not quite sure what it is. But listen, thank you very much indeed for joining us. Let me say hello first to James. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, Danny. How are you?
Very, very good indeed. And to Charlie. How are you, Charlie?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good. I'm very grateful for you introducing me a few moments ago to the idea of the hard stop, the amount of time you can actually... devote to this podcast to establish my Spurs credentials. Before we get going, I'll often produce bits of memorabilia. It doesn't really work, does it, on an audio platform, but I'll do this and explain to people. This gentleman is the flag that I took to Wembley and waved the last time the Spurs won a trophy. I think, Charlie, you're probably still in what they might call prep school. certainly none of you had left school because it's 13 long years ago, which shows the importance of why we're doing this podcast and this opening few weeks of the season for Tottenham, because, of course, we all normally head into a season full of optimism that this is the year they will win a trophy. I don't think that's the case. I think this is the most extraordinarily confused I've ever seen any club in the early weeks of a new season. Let's start with the big question. I'm looking, it doesn't take a genius to work out what it is, but I'll phrase it a different way. Charlie, if I start with you, you write about Spurs. Why is Harry Kane still at Tottenham? Why haven't Manchester City ponied up the money and bought him?
That is a good question. I mean, I think part of it ties into this thing that happens every year where clubs do what students do with their essays, and rather than actually just doing it couple of weeks in advance, as is possible, there's this sort of unwritten rule that you can't actually get your arse in gear until the very last minute and submit it on the day it's due. And clubs seem to have the same approach that, yeah, we could sign a player now, but should we just wait until August 31st and do it then? And I guess with the huge sums of money involved and, you know, the fact that that can change things by waiting and altering clubs' leverage and that sort of thing, they might feel that by leaving it a bit longer, they won't have to pay over the odds, and that, you know, Spurs might be more willing to sell in a few weeks. The indications we have is that that isn't really going to be the case. And obviously, Daniel Levy is not one known for his kind of flexibility in negotiations. But I suppose the only thing you would say, you would deduce, is that they think that they can wait it out and eventually even Levy will relent.
I love that phrase, not known for his flexibility in negotiations. That is indeed one way of putting it, though I doubt it is the way that other chairmen put it. But James, everything that Charlie says there is true, but surely, I mean, the very fact that we've not got Jack with us for the podcast shows that these nation state clubs, of which Manchester City are one, if they want to move heaven and earth, if they need to do something, they can get it done.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it on the face of it, you know, Manchester City have paid £100 million for the guy that England subbed on and then had to sub off again in the Euros. So you'd think, you know, if they wanted to buy the best player in the Premier League, which I would say Harry Kane certainly has been for the last few years, you would have thought, as you say, they could pony up the money and get the deal done ahead of the start of the season. But clearly they're dragging their heels. To go back to your original question of what is Harry Kane still doing at Spurs, I think I've asked that question of so many players down the years. You know, you watch these incredible players in what I would probably say were sort of 6 out of 10 teams. And it is bizarre, the quality of some of the players we've seen play in Spurs teams that have ended up finishing sort of 7th and 8th, isn't it, when you think about it?
Oh, look, what else? You know, I know, and I'm not going to press Charlie on his own religious affiliations. You know, that's all kept me going over, I mean, goodness, over half a century of watching exactly that conundrum that you're talking about. I support a reasonably average team here with a lovely history and now a very nice stadium. But we've always got two fantastic players and you kind of pin your hope to. I will say this about Harry Kane, and perhaps this is not supposed to be a confessional. Some years ago, I can't remember exactly which incident it was, I swore on a stack of Bibles and Marvin Gaye albums that I would never, ever fall in love with a professional footballer again, ever. And I went back on it and I've allowed myself to fall in love with Harry Kane. And I understand, you know, I've been around the game a long time. I understand the machinations and the finances and all the rest of it. And I still don't want him to go. I want him to stay. I want him to run down his contract. I don't care if Spurs get no money from. What do I care about the finances of it? I want Harry to stay.
What's quite interesting about that is if he runs down his contract, he'll be at Spurs till he's 31, which I think was the age that Teddy Sheringham left.
To win trophies.
Won everything afterwards in like 4 years at Manchester United and still had time to come back and play for Spurs for another 2 years. And Kane, you know, you think he doesn't rely on pace in a similar sort of way to Teddy Sheringham, really. So he could easily run down his contract, leave in 2024, is it? Win everything and then come back by sort of 2028.
At Harry's pace, the only thing he will run down is his contract. To be truthful about him, isn't it? Charlie, one of the things that perhaps James and I worry more than you about this is how this looks to the rest of the world. I mean, Spurs fancy themselves a big club. They are, of course, one of the founding members of the European Super League. More about that, no doubt, as the season progresses.
As they're in the Europa Conference League.
I mean, the optics of this for supporters of other clubs, and perhaps we shouldn't be doing this on the Spurs podcast, but the optics for fans is just hilarious. I mean, now that the pandemic seems to be waning, you know, with God's help, if you were to hire huge auditoria, you could get people to pay just to watch Spurs' embarrassment, couldn't you? And Spurs fans' embarrassment.
Yeah. I mean, firstly, great use of auditoria. Too often the pluralization is overlooked.
Oh, no. Not on this podcast. Not with the standards we're setting on this podcast.
No, I mean, as anyone like I have with a Latin A level, you know,
Just drop that in.
Dang.
Danny, you're talking to a bloke who's got his marathon personal best in his Twitter bio. I mean, he's not the most modest man.
The Latin didn't help that. Marathon's Greek, surely.
Very good. Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. But just thinking back to the auditoria, I don't think it has been that embarrassing for Spurs in a way, because at least I think they've been fairly consistent with what they've said, basically put up or shut up. And as it stands, City haven't done that. So we've seen other clubs almost be bullied into submission, and that can seem quite embarrassing, or teams flip-flopping on saying, you know, a player's not going to be sold and then he is. Whereas I feel at least Tottenham, their messaging on Kane has been pretty clear and hasn't really deviated. Some might feel that, yes, it's clearly not a great look when you've got, you know, the captain seemingly at odds with the club. But I think they've handled it okay. I think where most people have an issue is probably, you know, the fact that Kane has kind of, it seems like he didn't go in for training and then said that wasn't the plan. And I think those things have irritated the fans more than anything the club have done. But I may be wrong.
Everybody measures football different ways. Still, the best measure is the evidence for your own eyes. But if you just take the Optus stats, The best seven players in the Premier League last season, five of them were at Manchester City. The other two were Jack Grealish and Harry Kane. Hmm. We've seen with Paris Saint-Germain and Messi, the agglomeration of talent into a handful of clubs is being accelerated by the pandemic. But we literally could end up with all of the best players in the country playing for one club, Manchester City. And then on other podcasts, not as good as this, and certainly not as across the ancient languages as this podcast, you're going to have people saying, yeah, we can win the league. Can you really? Have you seen Manchester City's squad? Can you really win the league?
But just to stop you there, Danny, because I've kind of got Tom Werver.
Well done, by the way, for stopping me. Well done.
I've got my colleagues, Tom Werver and Mark Carey, kind of in my head here. When you say Opta stats for the best players, I mean, Opta's pretty granular on their stats. Do they have a best player stat? I mean, what's that being judged on?
There's a performance matrix where it's, I think, if I got this right, contribution to winning games. So it's quite hard for defenders. Okay. It's quite hard for defenders to do well in it. So effectively, it's the game changers. And last season, at the end of the season, five of those were Manchester City's front five, plus Kane, plus Grealish. But City are not prepared to take that risk with the Opta trophy next season. We're going to talk a little later in the podcast, and I should tell people what we're going to do. We're going to talk about the new boys at Spurs, by which I mean the off-the-pitch people, Nuno Espirito Santo and Fabio Paratici. And we're going to talk about the mystery of Tanguy and Ndombele. And we're going to come around eventually to try and pick an 11 that will somehow face up to Manchester City at the Lane at the weekend. And the last word on Kane, I guess, at the present moment, because, of course, this could all change even by the time people are listening to this podcast. I'm looking forward to perhaps, I hope they play him. I really hope Spurs play him. And I'm looking forward to when he scores the first goal, having watched three generations of footballers not celebrating against their old team. I'm looking forward to Harry not celebrating against his future team and a new breakthrough in modern football, which should be really, really good. We'll talk about whether or not you gentlemen think he might feature. I was going to say in that white shirt, but of course there's another possibility as well every week that they'll be wearing the psychedelic shirt, the one that echoes the cover of King Crimson's Islands album from 1969. We'll see which ones they turn out in. Because if Kane is already one sign of slight chaos with a small C, K, chaos for the German listeners, we've also got the issue here, surely, that here's a club who've got two completely new people at the controls. Let's talk about the manager first, Nuno Espirito Santo. He's the sixth choice. The poor man is in a terrible situation, isn't he? He doesn't know whether the new players are being bought to augment the squad or whether they're being bought on tick, knowing that they're going to sell Kane. Let me ask you a question, either of you, both of you. Do we even know how Spurs are going to play next season? Three at the back? Wing backs, two up front. What's happening?
Well, I think his pre-season games, he's been pretty consistent in how he's played. It's been four at the back and then a kind of 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1 in possession. So I'd imagine he'll do something similar. That's how he'll start. He's very flexible. He's more flexible than he's often given credit for. I mean, I should say, I've just finished writing a very, very long piece on Nuno that goes up on The Athletic, I think, Thursday morning. So there's loads in there if you are interested in him. But yeah, one of the themes that emerged in that was that he is quite flexible in the way he plays. He's got this reputation for being wedded to three at the back, but that was actually a system he played at Wolves, but he barely played at all at Valencia and Porto. So I think he's more of a pragmatist. But I mean, the thing with the preseason games was it was actually quite encouraging. They attacked with more cohesion than often they did last season. And just linking to the previous question about whether Kane plays, I'd be surprised if he started, just because they've seemed to have put quite a lot of effort into playing with this front four of Son, Bergwijn, Moura and Dele. And that's worked quite well for them. There's also a thing in the piece that Nuno stung to one of his former colleagues. He rarely plays people who haven't been there in training for the full week leading up to the game, because he feels that it's so important that all his messages have got across. So be interesting to see if he makes an exception for Kane, who, you know, if you're going to make an exception for anyone, he's probably the guy you do it for.
That's quite a big statement, isn't it? If Kane's in the 18, in the matchday squad, 20, I think it is now, isn't it?
Mm.
It's kind of a bit of a, one in the eye for Manchester City if this guy that they're seemingly so desperate to sign is suddenly, I mean, presumably sat on the bench. I mean, I agree with Charlie. I can't see it as any way he starts the game. But it does seem like quite a big, I mean, I would be amazed if even that happened, to be honest. But it feels like it would be quite a big sort of shift in the landscape if he was involved in that game.
Hello, I'm Mark Chapman. This is what we've got planned for you across the Athletic Podcast Network this season. The Ornstein and Chapman podcast has been rebranded as the Athletic Football Podcast. We'll release 4 episodes across the week as our journalists bring you the very best insight into the biggest stories in football and the business of sport. Michael Cox will continue to bring you the smartest analysis of all the big games in the Athletic Football Tactics podcast. Adam Hurry will now host 2 episodes of the Football Clichés podcast every single week with his usual take on the game. There's a brand new Athletic FPL podcast with our fantasy football expert, the FPL General, giving you all the advice you need to stay ahead of your mates and top of the FPL rankings. And the Athletic Podcast Network is also home now to a host of club-specific shows, some of which are going to be releasing multiple episodes every week. And we're now your destination, don't forget, for the Totally Football Show with James Richardson and the Totally Football League Show. And that is it. And then we can't fit any more in. All you've got to do is search for The Athletic in your podcast provider of choice or go to our podcast section on the Athletic app. Not surprisingly, with all of the stuff that I've just mentioned, The Athletic is now the world's biggest football podcast network.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Can we have a talk about Fabio Paratici? How are we pronouncing his name? How are you going? You're the language expert, Charlie. How are you pronouncing his name?
It's Paratici, and that came from James Horncastle, who should know.
No. We have to back down when the Horncastle speaks. That's fine. He has arrived at Spurs with this phenomenal reputation for, wheeling and dealing. And he spends more time on his phone than my teenage nieces. Are we seeing the fruits of it yet? Or are we, James, to be slightly suspicious of this modus operandi that's been described to us, whereby he takes, say he needs a left back, he contacts the clubs of 10 different left backs and starts some kind of gentleman's excuse me or musical chairs with them?
Yeah, I do wonder about that technique. I mean, if you're the kind of eighth choice of those 10 left backs, I mean, presumably
it's quite
well known. Well, yeah, well, exactly. I mean, presumably it's quite well known, particularly in Italy, that that's how this guy operates. And you would have thought, you know, the second someone sees Tottenham are interested in him, they might just kind of think, well, am I going to be first choice, or am I going to be, you know, given the elbow after having a medical because they've ended up getting someone who was 2 places up the list? I mean, I don't know whether that would necessarily be hugely encouraging to suddenly, you know, have Tottenham on the phone when you know that the director of football is on the phone to everyone else.
It's just that Daniel Levy, he gets these fixations, doesn't he? You know, Mourinho was a fixation. He had to get him because he was doing this. They got him. He didn't like him when he got him there. And I think Paratici is somewhat similar, Charlie. He's someone who Levy has seen wheeling and dealing, and particularly, of course, specialising in the free transfer at the end of players' contracts. Players that no doubt Juventus have contacted and said, you want to run that contract down, mate. You'll get a great contract in Turin.
Well, they've said it to about 12 players, probably. Some of whom have then let their contract run down and don't get the move. I'm like, Fabio!
Virtually no contract in Europe gets renewed now because they're all waiting for the Fab to give him a ring. I just wonder whether, at the present moment, the original joy when he arrived has been somewhat, the air has been taken out of those tyres by watching him make endless phone calls. But so far, a swap deal for Lamella. And of course, that one, incidentally, I hope I'm not speaking out of turn here. The deal for Lamella and Hill, I'm deeply suspicious of, because there's only one cleverer person than Fabio in the entire of European football. That's Monchi, the director of football. Mm,
that's true.
And 99 times out of 100, if you get involved in a swap deal with him, you'll be getting the linings from their bin in return for one of your players. Also, very sorry, I'm sure everyone on the podcast is, see the back of Eric Lamella. If ever there was a more Argentinian footballer, talented, temperamental, dirty, I loved Eric. I mean, he couldn't play for Toffee some of the games he played. I mean, they're a bonus, all the rest of it. But at least you knew he was on the pitch. And more importantly, the Oppo knew that he was on the pitch. And that performance against Arsenal last year, comes on a sub, I mean, gets the Rabona, gets sent off, waves to the crowd. Great day's work as far as Eric's concerned.
I mean, that pretty much summed up his whole career, that, didn't it, I think? That sort of half hour of football. From the sublime to the ridiculous, I mean, that is Eric Lamella, isn't it?
Yeah, but the fellow who has replaced him, Hill, Spurs fans, I think if you go on 8-minute showreels on YouTube, and I'm sure you've both watched it, I was talking to my colleagues on a European sports show that I do, and saying it reminded me, and I hated to say the words because you sound insane, the way he carries the ball reminded me of Johan Cruyff. Johan Cruyff!
Mm.
And apparently he's called Little Cruyff in Spain.
Yeah, yeah.
But people have seen this in him. Now I want to turn to something that I think the great mystery writers and film directors would call the mysterious future of Tanguy Ndombele. His name even smacks of exotic adventure. What's happening with this fella? Is he a misunderstood genius? Misunderstood by the last three Spurs managers, by the way. Or the club's worst ever purchase?
I mean, I think, you know, you mentioned the last three managers. That's kind of seemed like a fairly clear understanding, isn't it, to me? Or a fairly universal understanding, maybe.
They could be wrong.
They could all be wrong. These three very different managers and three very different men. Or four, I guess, I suppose, if you include Mason, who I don't think played him at all, did he?
He played his first game and then he didn't start after that.
Oh, that's right. He got subbed against Southampton. He got hooked after an hour against Southampton, didn't he?
Yeah. Didn't play at all in the final.
We've been very big advocates of Tanguy Ndombele on this podcast over the last 2 years, but I do have to admit, even I have been tested by the fact that he's gone away for the whole summer and come back and seemingly not been either in a physical or mental state to play in pre-season matches. I mean, you know, he's had the benefit of not being involved in one of the major. I can tell Charlie is already desperate to come in and defend him, which I suppose at least gives us balance.
He is one of the most interesting players Spurs have, for sure, and someone I've probably written about him more than anyone else in the last 2 years, including on Tuesday, a piece kind of explaining the current situation, you know, which is essentially that he would be open to a move, certainly if he, you know, continues not to play. It's a bit chicken and egg, you know, is he not playing because he wants to move or vice versa? You know, Nuno didn't pick him on the weekend. Not because of a fitness issue, you know, he just didn't think he was in the right state of mind. And again, you can think, is that because he's weighing up his options? He's someone who you kind of constantly think, I've had enough, you know, I'm washing my hands of him, and then he'll do something and just kind of hook you back in. That's what he's done again and again, you know, be it a turn, a drop of the shoulder, one of these passes that he can do. And then, yeah, you're hooked again. And there was an expression. So someone I spoke to in France, not to come across a complete knob again, but the expression he used
was... by all means do.
Lean into it, Charlie, come on.
I mean, I may as well just own it. Anyway, he says they have an expression in France, ni avec lui, ni sans lui, which basically translates as can't live with him, can't live without him. And this contact I was speaking to used that in relation to Ndombele. And he said, because all the managers at Spurs have had it. You know, Mourinho, it looked like he was out. But then Mourinho played him loads last season because he realised he had something that no one else in that Spurs team or that midfield had. He can drive forward with the ball. He can make line-breaking passes. And that was the one thing. You look at the Spurs team on Sunday, and I think they were good. But that is something they really lack when they don't have him. So it's like, can you afford to lose him? And there's also this fear that if you do lose him, he could go on to be such an incredible player. You know, there is a reason why, you know, PSG and Real Madrid wanted him when Spurs spent 55 million, which I know seems crazy now, pre-pandemic world. 6-year contract, 200k. I know that also seems crazy. And that's probably why it's going to be really difficult for Spurs to find a buyer for him. So maybe they're a bit trapped, but I would love to see it come good.
Two things on that, Charlie. One, the phrase, you can't live with him, can't live without him. We do have that in English as well, so that you could have just said it in English.
Not as pithily, because it's literally just neither with him nor without him. So it's fewer words, and you know I don't like to use loads of words in pieces.
No, exactly, yeah. And secondly, my feeling with Ndombele is maybe that actually, weirdly, Spurs aren't good enough for him.
Mm.
Like a better team with better players could afford to accommodate a player like that who is only kind of going to turn up 40% of the time. And he'd win them matches in that 40% of the time, but the rest of the time they'd kind of be okay with carrying a bloke who sort of cruises through games. It's kind of how I felt about Frank Lampard of Chelsea in England. Like, he could kind of cruise through games with Chelsea and then pop up and blast one in from the edge of the box, deflected off someone's shin. And it didn't matter because they had Drogba and Terry and Balak and whoever else in the team, so they'd be okay. But England, you know, they had Phil Jagielka and Phil Jones and whoever in the team perhaps needed someone in midfield who could kind of dominate the game a bit more. And I wonder whether a similar thing is true here.
You've got a few years of youth on me. I love the way each generation of England fans has different scars that they can't let heal. And yours is that team with no defenders and trying desperately to fit Lampard, Gerrard, etc. into the same 11. But actually, I think the Ndombele thing brings a bigger problem for Spurs. You're absolutely right to say that a 55, 60 million, whatever they paid for him, and 200 grand a week, he is there. He is one of the central players in the drama at the club. The problem for me seems, and help me with this, guys, so this podcast is as much about sort of mental well-being for me when you become my counsellors, is that Pierre, you know, Højbjerg, we saw in the Euros, is a fantastic player of his type. And he started the season fantastic with Spurs, but tailed off because he's being asked to do everything. They don't have a partner for Højbjerg, and it's supposed to be Ndombele. And whether you play with a two or a three, if Ndombele doesn't step up to the plate, start deep, surge forward, make those passes, who is supposed to play next to Højbjerg in the middle of that midfield?
Well, firstly, Danny, I presume you're talking about Højbjerg.
Yes.
Oh my God.
And I only say that because James called me out for once, I think, saying Trippier accidentally, obviously, rather than Trippier. So I wanted to point out to James that he mispronounces Højbjerg every week. And now, Danny, you're doing it as well.
And yet, well, let me ask you then, since we're doing this, Charlie, and establishing such obvious enmity so early in the new season, the new series, do you say Paris or Paris when you're talking to people?
Well, yeah, I appreciate that one. I know that's a bit of a grey area, but...
Yeah.
In fact, no, I'll just lie. I say Paris because I'm that much of a twat.
Okay, well, no. This show needs twats. Every show needs twats. I mean, I'm glad you're wearing the hat because normally it's given straight to me. I'll win it back. Don't worry about that. All right, avoiding the question. Who is supposed to play next door to the Danish bloke?
I think it'll be... Ollie Skip on the weekend.
It's actually pronounced Skip.
Yeah, no, I was going to say Skip. I was thinking Ollie Skype. I mean, since coming back from injury, he's played all the recent friendlies. Lo Celso only came back from the Copa America quite late. So I think it'll be him. I mean, look, on last season, that midfield of Højbjerg, Lo Celso and Ndombele was this kind of mirage that we always wanted to happen, and it very rarely did. It seems, in theory, like having a really good balance hasn't been used all that much. But, I think it will be Skip. But I think with Skip and Højbjerg, you probably do need a Lo Celso or an Ndombele in there as well, because they're quite similar players.
Yeah, I mean, what about Skip? And it brings on to another subject. Obviously, the man staring into his phone 24/7 will have other ideas. How many more players do you think? We've seen, you know, a few of the established first-team squad making their way out. There was talk about Skip, which is why I'm mentioning it, going on loan. Who else will we see depart, James, in the next 3 weeks?
I mean, it sounds like from the pieces I've read on The Athletic from Charlie that Sanchez, Sissoko and Aurier are the three that they're still keen to move on. It's probably fair to say, isn't it, Charlie?
Yeah.
I don't think there'll be too many objections among the fan base to any of those three going.
First of all, Serge Aurier, The oft-repeated idea that he's going back to Paris Saint-Germain, I mean, it's just ludicrous, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's not happening, is it?
Sissoko, bless him, until the latter half of last season, I thought he was a real trier. It's very hard to see them get offloading him. And Sanchez is the one that slightly fascinates me, and this could be pure self-delusion. I think there's a decent defender in there. But, of course, all we ever see on the pitch is people making two mistakes, a person who makes two mistakes a game, one of which costs a goal.
It definitely feels like he's lost a lot of confidence. When he was playing with kind of peak Vertonghen or peak Alderweireld, or possibly sometimes both, he kind of felt like he was he kind of looked a decent, like promising centre-back. You know, he would have been, what, like kind of 23, 24, or 22, 23 then, I guess. And he kind of felt like he had a pretty high ceiling, that he could be like a top Premier League centre-half. But yeah, I do wonder whether he needs someone to hold his hand, and he hasn't really had that in the last two seasons because there's been so much chopping and changing and, you know, fumbling and whatever else that he's struggled to kind of get his head straight, perhaps. He definitely strikes me as someone who, you know, his head's gone quite quickly.
There was interesting. I did a piece on Sanchez last year, and speaking to people in Holland, obviously he'd been at Ajax. There's a view there that he left Ajax too soon, which I hadn't really thought of, but I thought was quite interesting because it's quite a fine balance with when you leave Ajax. We've seen others who leave, you know, before they're fully developed, and it's quite hard because you don't get cut the same slack, obviously, in the Premier League compared to the Eredivisie, where you're playing for Ajax and you're probably dominating games. He's come over to England and he has made some mistakes, and definitely, as James says, it's knocked his confidence. But yeah, I mean, he's someone who they'd like to sell. I was told, though, that Sevilla, that's not a deal they can do. Then Sissoko, I think Nice and some clubs in Turkey have expressed an interest. He's very Turkish Superliga. Tanganga reported last week they've accepted a loan offer of him from Galatasaray, which he's kind of weighing up. But I think he'll be the starting right back on Sunday. And I think that position suits him really well. And then we'll see. Then it might suddenly be that, do they need to spend, you know, 15, 20 million on Tomiyasu if Tanganga can come back into the team and show that he's ready to play that role more regularly?
I mean, I was, and I read your piece with ever-widening eyes, shall we say. I was amazed that Spurs are thinking about letting Tanganga go out on loan. It's not like he's 18 and they're trying to toughen him up, or one of those, you know, play football, we're real men. And I mean, surely they must know if this lad is going to be good enough now for the Premier League, the upper half of the Premier League. I'd like to say the top third of the Premier League, but it sounds a little bit presumptuous right now. Well, why are they letting him go, Charlie?
Well, I think it just comes down to minute, you know, how much he's going to play. And if they don't think he'll play enough this season, that they think it's important for his development. And also, Spurs have been burnt before with players not going out on loan, not playing enough, and slightly stagnating. So I think they're just wary that will happen with Tanganga. But I do know what you mean. He feels like someone who is ready. He's played enough. You know, when he first burst into the team 2 years ago, he was great. And, you know, a real breath of fresh air at that time where Spurs had a lot of injuries and it was quite down at the mood.
Can you burst onto the scene as a defender? I'm not sure you can.
Well, that's certainly Roy Keane's view, isn't it? You cannot burst on the scene if you're a defender.
I feel like you emerge as a defender.
But I think the reason I say that is because literally it was almost the first minute of his debut, he cleared two shots off the line.
That is true.
And I think if ever there's a defender bursting onto the scene, it's doing it against the Champions League winners and clearing it twice off the line in the first minutes of your debut.
Well, I guess it's the greatest defensive debut for Tottenham since Danny Rose.
Yes. That's a good shout, yeah.
That was a burst.
Yeah, absolutely.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Well, look, we kind of talked about the mixture of players Spurs have. And of course, we accept by the end of August, it could be a very, very different looking squad, depending on who's playing centre forward, for instance, and depending on what the endless phone activity of Fabio Paratici, I'm going to get this right, Paratici has brought forward. But of course, there's much more pressing business in the form of a game against arguably the best team in the world coming up in about 72 hours. Let's end the podcast. Actually, I want to find out what else Charlie's going to bring for us in the course of the next few days on The Athletic. But let's play a stupid game. Let's pick who we think Nuno will pick for this game against Manchester City. And then we can, when we do the podcast on Monday, we can all reflect on just how clever we were to get these selections so, so right. Go on. Who wants to start? James, do you want to start?
Yeah, I'll say Lloris will play. Am I doing the whole team or just the goalkeeper?
Do the whole team and then we can laugh at you accordingly.
Okay, fine. So I'll say Lloris in goal. I mean, that seems likely, doesn't it?
Yeah. That should get your confidence should be up now. We both agree with you.
Good. Thank you.
One on the board.
Now, Charlie has planted the Tanganga seed, so to speak. So now he said that and he played well at the weekend and you know set up the goal as well. I can kind of see that might be. I mean, Doherty hasn't played much in pre-season. Has Aurier played at all?
He came on against Arsenal for the last few minutes.
Okay, well, I'll go with you, Tanganga. If we assume Christian Romero isn't going to play, which I think is probably a safe assumption.
Yeah.
Spurs fans on Twitter will absolutely love this. Dyer and Sanchez, I think that seems like the only combination.
Of course, it's the 2018 World Cup all over again. And here's Eric Dyer and Sanchez playing, because that's what's going to happen. I agree with you. Do you agree with that, Charlie?
Yeah. I think that will be, I think it will be, well, I don't want to spoil it actually, but yes, I think, yes, I agree. It will be those. That is, Dyer and I don't want to give too much away.
Are you going to come up with some like left turn at the end, Charlie? You've got some like bizarre selection.
Yeah, I'm going to drop the bomb that Troy Parrott's going to start, even though he's gone out on loan. They bring him back, he's going to play.
That would be a
surprise. Well, they have got a return clause, but I don't think it kicks until January. So.
He can't do it after a week. So yeah, Reguilón at left back, I guess. I don't really see that being any different. He seems like he's done quite well in pre-season as well.
Yeah, he's been good.
I mean, he's done very well. If you saw that picture of that barbecue, his legs are now like pipe cleaners. He got very fit-looking legs there.
I wasn't sure about some of the meat on that barbecue, though. It did look like, I mean, well done, maybe would be the phrase I'd use.
But it also doesn't look like a pre-season meal. I mean, it's all right for me. I mean, I'm superbly upholstered, but I'm not expected to play professional sport for 90 minutes. I did not think that was a meal which many of the sports scientists would have approved of. I've got to be honest. I approved of it. If that's any use. All right. I'm going to help you here to move this on, James, because
he's going to
play one of the two midfield holders.
Yeah. We'll say with Skip, I think I'm assuming everyone agrees to that as well, don't they? I mean, this kind of team feels like it's picking itself.
Yeah, really. I think it'll be the same.
I wasn't sure about Skip at all. I thought we'll come on to what I thought. But so you've got Højbjerg and Skip,
I think Skip and Lo Celso is the only one I'm a little wavering on, but I think it probably will be Skip.
I think it's going to be Skip. Then, hang on, how many players is that? Six?
Yeah.
You've got six and a goalkeeper, seven.
And then that front four. Dele, Moura, Bergwijn and Son.
Yeah, Bergwijn, who we're pretending has been okay now, aren't we?
He scored a goal.
What we're doing now, the posters for the reissue of Martin Scorsese's Mean Streets was just a man looking at the world through his fingers. And that's how I see Bergwijn. I can pretend he's going to be all right against Manchester City, but I've got absolutely no evidence for it.
Well, he scored against Man City on his debut.
He did score that goal against Manchester City. It was mishit.
Come on.
I'm hoping that Stephen is a little bit fitter than he's looked while playing for Spurs so far. Hello, Tanguy as well.
That was a burst on the scene, by the way, that Stevie Bergwijn goal.
So there's his team. What about you, Charlie? What do you think?
Yeah, that's it. I think it will be the same team that started against Arsenal. As I say, the only one I think might change is Lo Celso could possibly come in for Skip.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I think at this stage of the season, so much of it is, you know, how fit the players are. And Nuno's been fortunate, you know, because Spurs had so many players who performed badly last year that they didn't get in the Euros, Euro squads. They've had like a full preseason. So I think they're in a good position to
Mourinho masterclass.
Exactly. That's probably he's laid
the groundwork.
Mourinho's greatest gift to his successor.
I take it you all noticed Mourinho's most recent friendly. Roma, 5 red cards, 3 on the pitch, Mourinho's assistant and Jose himself. He is the gift that does indeed keep on giving. So that's our view. I'll be swayed by the experts, Lloris, Tanganga, Dias Sanchez-Reguilón, the Danish fella, Skip, Moura, Deli, Bergwijn, and Son. Jack Grealish will probably be on the bench for them, which is quite a frightening prospect, isn't it?
Their bench is going to be ridiculous.
They're going to have a lot of players missing, aren't they? They've had so many players away at the Euros and the Copa America and whatever that have hardly trained. I mean, I think they could be quite undercooked or overcooked.
I think I think
maybe playing to Spurs' hand.
I think it's a good time to play them. That they'll have a lot of players who might only be fit enough to be on the bench or not at all.
Okay, well, you've engendered a sense of optimism that I wasn't woken up with this morning. Shall we put it that way about this fixture? Also, the first game every season is a chance for the little teams, Brentford against Arsenal, Spurs against Manchester City, to show what they hope to bring to the Premier League this season. Look, I think we've covered most of the things that don't require just endless speculation. When we come back in a few days' time here on The View from the Lane, James, Charlie, maybe Jack will be back from Paris here, right? And myself will perhaps have a Spurs victory to talk about, and wouldn't that be great? All it requires for me to do now, Charlie, is to say you've got about 3 days before Spurs actually have to take to the sward and make the new season happen. What are you going to be concentrating on? What kind of articles are you going to bring to us in The Athletic?
So there's a big piece on Nuno that's been in the works for some time, kind of looking at him. There's this idea of kind of him as a Mourinho disciple, and it's looking at that and how true that is, and going into a lot of detail on his man management, on his training, his approach to sports science, the Jorge Mendes thing.
By the way, can I just say on that, when you said George Mendes like that last time, we had complaints that was wrong. Because he's Portuguese, not German.
Oh, so it should be
what? Portuguese, not Spanish. Sorry.
So it should be what?
George, yeah.
Or Jorge? Or George? Okay. Mendes, whatever.
I think it's George.
Pedro Mendes, let's go with that.
Pedro Mendes,
That's a lot easier.
Hello, Ben Thatcher, if you're listening.
Yeah, exactly. and a proper season preview as well. And I should say as well, it's probably a good sign that we're doing articles that people care about, because a lot of the topics you mentioned, Paratici, Brian Hill, Romero, have done big pieces on over the last few weeks. And Lamella, our colleague Seb Stafford-Bloor, did a great piece on him and kind of why he was so loved at Tottenham. So that's all there for you as well, and lots of more.
Well, fantastic. And remember, if you're not already a subscriber, you can read all of those articles by going to theathletic.com/SpursPod. And right now, you can sign up with a 33% discount on a full subscription. We'll be back on Monday to reflect on Spurs' first game of the season, a victory over Manchester City. See you then.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.